Mirror, Mirror, A Good Omens Fan Fiction by Improbable Dreams 900. Chapter 3, A Crime of Opportunity. The more Crawley inspected the items scattered about his counterpart's residence, the less he understood. For instance, there was a large black mirror, but it was lower than ideal and not very effective at reflecting. Secondly, there was a bookcase filled with what, at first glance, appeared to be short, thin books made from some sort of hard plastic. But when he pulled one free and worked it open, this took a few moments, he saw that it was just a container for a strange round disc with a hole in its center. His handwriting was on the disc, and it read, Soul Music Number 128, Dishonest 18th Sen, Financers with Adulterous Priest Accompaniment. When Crawley pried the disc free, he saw that the backside was shimmering and rainbow-colored. Crawley decided appreciation of aesthetics was another weakness of his counterpart, and shoved it back on the shelf in disgust. It was also a rather poor drawing of a woman hanging on the wall, but apart from that, the lounge was fairly devoid of possessions. Putting the inspection of further rooms off for a few moments more, Crawley miracled a small bag of soot into his hand and strode to the nearest stretch of blank wall. It only took a few minutes to make the appropriate sigil on the wall, smearing the soot over the elegant white wallpaper with two fingers. He would have constructed it on the floor, as was traditional, except this floor was soft and springy, and made of tiny thick threads, not at all suitable for drawing on. When Crawley had finished, he miracled the bag of soot and the residue still on his fingers out of existence. He said the words, and a shaft of light descended, bathing him in its bright blue luminescence. There was a moment of silence, and then the voice of Metatron spoke. You have used the wrong sigil. Crawley smiled. No, I haven't. You are a demon. Please stand by as we send someone to smite you.
Don't worry about it, Crawley said easily. I have valuable information for you. There was a long, suspicious pause.
We do not work with demons. Our father cast you from his grace. You are damned. Goodbye.
I wish to defect. There was another pause, longer this time, and Crawley smiled.
One moment. The connection paused, and Crawley knew he was being transferred to a more secure line. The heaven of this world, it seemed, wasn't an inch different from his own. After a few moments, there was a faint pop, and the Metatron said, You are lying. Demons do not defect.
Just because one never has before, Crawley said reasonably, doesn't mean it can't happen.
Heaven does not work with demons.
You already said that, Crawley pointed out, but he knew that, though Heaven might not be interested in working with demons, the Metatron was just as partial to a favorable deal as anyone. I'll tell you what, Crawley continued. Hear what I have to say, and if you don't want to work with me by the end of it, that'll be that. No harm done. There was another pause.
I'm listening.
Crawley smiled. I understand that proper defection isn't really an option, and I'm okay with that. I still despise all your righteous arses, to be clear, but recently hell has hurt me, very personally, and I'm looking to pay them back in mind. I know some of Hell's secrets, and I'm willing to spill. I want to meet with Michael in person. As I said, I don't trust any of you any more than I trust any of them. So, I'd like Michael to personally guarantee my safety throughout this. In return for the information I'll be giving you, I don't want you to send any angels after me. I won't bother you in heaven, and I ask you not to bother me on earth. I understand you have no reason to believe me, so let me offer you a freebie. 100 miles east and 15 miles south of the major western Hell Gate is a smaller gate. It leads to a little-known area of the Third Circle, and as such is very rarely used, visited, or guarded. I'd stay out of the rain once you get there, though. It's acidic to the wings of angels. The frantic sound of scribbling came from the other end of the line, and Crawley knew his plan was going off without a hitch. As I said, I'd like to meet with Michael, Crawley repeated. The meeting will be on Earth, and he will come alone. We will meet at midnight in 3 days' time at a location I will choose. If Michael doesn't come, or if he doesn't come alone, I will not appear, and I will assume we have no deal. Do we have an understanding? I said the voice of God. You need time to think it over, Crawley said smoothly. I understand. I will be in touch again in 2 days' time with the location for the meeting. You can check the authenticity of the information I gave you. Is this acceptable? Yes. Yes, that's fine. Excellent. The line abruptly went dead, and Crawley smiled again as the light faded. This was going to be even easier than he'd hoped. The demon turned his attention back to the row of withered plants and the window beyond them. All that was left now was finding a suitable place to meet, and maybe gaining some basic understanding of this world while he was at it. Crawley was a quick learner, and knowing what he was up against would lessen his disadvantage. So, Crawley patted himself down, took a short tour of the remainder of his double's residence, and carefully left the divine sword hidden out of view and cloaked under a powerful concealment spell above the kitchen cupboards, and strode past the slightly scorched front door and out into this strange new world. Aziraphel was concerned. To be more accurate, Aziraphel was somewhat annoyed and mildly inconvenienced, and this translated into concern. He and Crowley had agreed to meet at St. James Park and then walk to the Ritz as they did every Monday and Thursday afternoon. But this rainy Thursday, Crowley had not arrived. At first, Aziraphel had assumed that he was just late, which was acceptable for the first 10 minutes or so. Being a demon, Crowley insisted he arrive late to a certain percentage of all his engagements. But if Crowley was legitimately delayed, he usually called or sent a text. Aziraphel was still working on understanding these texts. But after several moments of poking around on the mobile telephone Crowley had given him and laboriously navigating to the correct screen, following religiously the instructions Crowley had written up for him, and which Aziraphel kept with the mobile at all times, he didn't see any new messages. Crowley had seemed his normal self during their Monday stroll, and also when he'd dropped by Aziraphel's bookshop the following Tuesday. And Aziraphel didn't remember saying anything that would have offended him, so there was no reason for the demon to be sulking and ignoring him. Which meant that Crowley had either forgot or was in some sort of serious trouble. Aziraphel decided the former was more likely, and after waiting around for another 10 minutes, listening to the rain drum on his umbrella, he went to the Ritz by himself. because Crowley's ill manners weren't about to stop him from getting a cream cake and some scones. It was a perfectly peaceful dinner, but Aziraphale did admit to himself that it was a little dull, and he would have liked having someone to talk to. Next, Aziraphale tried phoning Crowley's mobile with his own, and thought he succeeded after one of the Ritz staff was kind enough to help him out. Crowley didn't answer, though, and it went directly to the demon's voice mail, which was just Crowley telling him that he was unavailable, and please, Aziraphale, don't claim you spoke with me later because this is a recording. I am busy. Now, rather annoyed at the demon's absence, Aziraphale walked home by himself and shook off his irritation at being stood up by burying his nose in one of his books. The next day, Aziraphale didn't hear anything more from Crowley, and his second and third attempts to phone the demon resulted in him again reaching Crowley's voicemail. All of this irritation, though, was quickly morphing into something alarmingly like concern. Ever since the failed attempt at the apocalypse, Crowley had been more reliable. It wasn't unusual for the demon to disappear off the grid for a couple of days, or even a week, but he always let Aziraphale know beforehand, usually so that the angel would know to go over to his flat and water his plants. When Crowley still hadn't gotten back to him by the following day, Aziraphale decided to drop by Crowley's flat and see if the demon had left him a note, or if he was there himself. It was entirely possible the demon had fallen asleep and had been enjoying it so much that he'd simply forgotten to wake up later. Aziraphale walked the 15 minutes to Crowley's Mayfair flat and frowned when he saw the Bentley parked neatly in front of the building, apparently completely unharmed. Aziraphale miracled his way past the security at the building's entrance and took the lift to the 6th floor. Aziraphale knocked on the sleek black door to Crowley's flat. "Crowley," he called, "are you in there?" Given that the Bentley was outside, Aziraphale thought it likely that he was, but it wasn't inconceivable that Crowley had just chosen to walk somewhere nearby and just never returned. There's a long moment of silence, and Aziraphale was about to knock again when the door swung open. And there Crowley was, looking hale and hearty and not at all like he had a good reason to be forgetting his appointments. He was sporting a rather absurd-looking goatee, though. "My dear," Aziraphale said sternly, his concern quickly turning back into mild annoyance. "Where have you been?" Crowley blinked for a moment, expression guarded.
Sorry?
Aziraphale sighed and pushed the door open. Evidently, he wasn't going to be getting an apology anytime soon. He strode past Crowley into the demon's spotless designer flat, sleek white furniture and wallpaper in sharp contrast to the black television, sound system, and the legs of the coffee table. "You didn't meet me at St. James," Aziraphale complained, dropping onto Crowley's sofa and feeling himself sink several inches. "I even looked at the infernal piece of technology you gave me." Crowley did not immediately respond, and Aziraphale turned his gaze back to Crowley to see the demon still standing by the open door, one hand out of sight behind it. Aziraphale sighed and pushed himself back to his feet. "Look, my dear, if you're busy, that's fine, but please do let me know. I was waiting in the rain." Something in Crowley seemed to shift, and he ran a hand down the edge of the door and then quickly closed it.
Yes, sorry about that,"
he said, turning his back on Aziraphale and heading into the kitchen. Aziraphale waited for an explanation, but none was forthcoming. Sighing again, Aziraphale moved to follow Crowley, but before he could, the demon reappeared at the doorway to the kitchen, rubbing his hands together idly. Despite the easy movement, Crowley's shoulders were tense, and Aziraphale slowed. His friend's serpentine eyes tracked Aziraphale's every movement as the angel drew to a stop a meter or so away. Crowley's gaze was oddly calculating, and a feeling of unease crawled across Aziraphale's skin.
"I was busy,"
Crowley offered, voice untroubled. "Last minute, infernal wiles and all that." Aziraphale thought this was a rather flimsy excuse, but he let it slide. "What's the story behind the beard?" he asked instead. The perfectly trimmed goatee sort of worked with Crowley's sleek millionaire look, but Aziraphale hadn't seen him with facial hair in so long that it was a bit of an abrupt change. Evidently, he'd miracled it there, because it wouldn't have had time to grow naturally since the last time Aziraphale had seen him.
Just a bit of variety,"
Crowley said, raising a hand self-consciously. "Well, would you like to go to the Ritz this afternoon?" Aziraphale asked hopefully. Whatever infernal wiles Crowley had evidently been up to earlier, he was clearly done with them now.
"I'd rather not,"
Crowley said, moving past Aziraphale.
"No?"
Aziraphale asked, disappointed. Crowley was usually the one suggesting they go out, and it was rare of Crowley to turn down Aziraphale's offers, particularly if he didn't have anything better to do.
"Like I said, I'm busy,"
Crowley said. Aziraphale frowned and followed Crowley back into the lounge. This time, Aziraphale's eyes fell on the row of plants near the window.
"Oh no, your poor plants!" Aziraphale exclaimed, hurrying past Crowley and laying a horrified hand on one of their pots.
Crowley's dozen plants were brown and withered, only dry husks of their former selves. This seemed nigh on impossible because Aziraphale had seen them just a few days ago, and they'd been as lush and terrified as always. In fact, they still seemed terrified.
"What happened?"
"What? Oh, it doesn't matter."
"Doesn't matter?"
Aziraphale echoed in disbelief. He turned and stared at the demon.
"They're just plants,"
Crowley said, looking away. Aziraphale felt his concern return in full force, and he quickly crossed to Crowley and laid a gentle hand on his friend's elbow.
"Something's wrong, my dear, isn't it?"
Crowley looked down at Aziraphale's hand, and Aziraphale could feel the tenderness of his arm under his touch. Crowley opened his mouth, hesitated a long moment, and flicked his eyes up to Aziraphale's.
"Actually," he said, voice halting.
"Yes."
"What is it?" Aziraphale asked nervously. "Is there anything I can do to help?"
Crowley seemed to debate for a moment how much he wanted to tell Aziraphale, and Aziraphale had a sinking feeling that something significant must have occurred.
"Is it hell?"
Aziraphale prompted worriedly. Crowley hesitated and nodded.
"That is why you missed our meeting,"
Aziraphale said. Crowley nodded again.
"Oh, my dear, you should have said something,"
Aziraphale said, drawing Crowley over to the sofa by the elbow so they could sit down.
"What did they want?"
Crowley took a deep breath.
"It's not quite hell," he clarified.
"But there's a demon after me." Aziraphale took a fortifying breath and extended his senses just in case, searching for any demonic intruders. Crowley stiffened beside him, but Aziraphale didn't sense anyone else in the immediate vicinity. Crowley's aura did seem a little colder and muddier than normal, though with a tight knot of thought and emotion. Aziraphale interpreted this to mean that Crowley was very worried, and he patted the demon reassuringly on the hand. Is it Hostur? Aziraphale gasped. Beside him, Crowley grimaced. Hostur? He repeated, and then added, yes, Hostur.
Aziraphale nodded automatically, turning the problem over in his mind. Hostur was a Duke of Hell, and if he was after Crowley, then they would need to take precautions immediately.
What do you want to do? Aziraphale asked. I can bless some more holy water if you'd like.
Crowley shook his head.
That won't be necessary. There was actually something else I had in mind.
Aziraphale turned his attention fully to his friend. What's that?
Well, Crowley said, flicking his gaze down to the coffee table. There's this weapon in hell that I think would be able to kill him. A sword.
Aziraphale blinked at Crowley in surprise.
A sword? He echoed.
It's enchanted, Crowley explained, turning his head up and meeting Aziraphale's gaze.
It was forged in the fires of hell and can kill any demon. Permanently.
But why can't we just use holy water? Aziraphale asked, puzzled. It worked last time.
Well, yes, Crowley allowed, turning his gaze back to his elegant coffee table.
But we can't do it twice, can we?
Aziraphale opened his mouth to ask why not, and then put together what Crowley was saying.
Ah, he said, because Hostur would be expecting it, you mean?
Precisely, Crowley agreed, sounding oddly a little relieved. But this sword will do the trick, and he'll never see it coming. It's not very deep into hell either. Most demons don't even know it exists.
Then how do you know about it? Aziraphale asked curiously.
Connections, Crowley said vaguely, waving his hand. You know me.
Aziraphale frowned. But why can't we use a divine blade? Wouldn't it do the same thing?
A slightly pained look came over Crowley's face, but it was quickly wiped away.
And where would we find one of those? I don't suppose you just have one lying around.
Aziraphale admitted to himself that this was a fair point.
You know I don't have mine anymore, and heaven doesn't exactly hand them out anymore.
Crowley gestured towards Aziraphale to emphasize the point the angel had just made.
Which is why we need this diabolical sword. It's the only one outside of hell's armory, which I can't get into any easier than you can heaven's.
So you're going to get this sword? Aziraphale asked. Is it safe?
Well, Crowley said, turning his gaze back to Aziraphale. I've been thinking about that.
He leaned a little closer and covered the nearer of Aziraphale's hands with his own. The reason no demon's already taken this sword is that it's sealed in a chamber in the second circle with a lock that no demon can open.
That's unusual, Aziraphale said, somewhat preoccupied with the steady warmth of Crowley's hand on his own.
Since it does kill demons, and demons are known for being an untrustworthy lot, Crowley pointed out. I supposed it made sense at the time, but then I thought all you'd need is for someone who's not a demon to open the lock.
Crowley's hand tightened slightly around Aziraphale's. Like an angel.
Aziraphale looked up at Crowley sharply and met the demon's golden, serpentine eyes. He appeared perfectly serious, his gaze level and clear.
You want me to steal a sword from hell for you?
Aziraphale repeated slowly, just to make sure he understood.
with me, Crowley corrected. I'm coming too, and it's not very far into hell. I can show you exactly where it is, and once you've broken the lot, I'm sure it will go very quickly.
Are you certain we can't just use holy water?
Crowley shook his head. Hoster's smart, he said. He'll have seen it coming and prepared for it. The sword is the best way to catch him off guard.
But how would we even get in? Aziraphale asked. If you hadn't noticed, I am an angel.
I've thought of that, Crowley said, shifting a little closer on the sofa and adjusting his grip on Aziraphale's hand. I know a back way in that'll take us right to where we want to be in the second circle. That's what I've been doing these last few days, making sure the way is safe.
Aziraphale hesitated. Crowley did tend to know best where below and its denizens were concerned, and he was certain that Crowley had thought through all his options carefully.
Please, Crowley said, one thumb sweeping light arcs over the back of Aziraphale's hand. I wouldn't be asking you to do this if there was any other way.
Aziraphale looked up in surprise and met Crowley's gaze. There was a desperation in the demon's beautiful eyes that he rarely saw, and he knew that he could never refuse Crowley his help.
Aziraphale sighed and pressed Crowley's hand between his own.
Of course, my dear. Anything. End of chapter 3.